And we're holding on to Samach Dalet Amud Aleph at the top. We talked in the Mishnah about the concept of Tumas HaTahorim, where we said if you have a Nazir or a person who's on his way to make Korban Pesach, who became Tomei, who passed over an area. Later on, we discovered that there was Tumah underground or something over there. So we said that there's a halacha l'moshe misinai of Tumas HaTahorim that nevertheless we consider him kosher, and the Nazir doesn't have to restart his Nazirus, and the Oysa Pesach doesn't have to bring Pesach shame. On the other hand, we said in the Mishnah, if at the time when he passed by that area, he was in fact Tomei, then we say, Cheskas HaTomei Tomei Shiraglayim Madover. So then we said, we gave the example, let's say, that he went into a cave to Tovel, and then we discovered later on, embedded in the ground of the cave, is a Kazayis Menanes or something else that would be Matamehim. Then we say, we don't apply the Din of Tumas HaTahorim. Then we say, in fact, he would be Tomei and the Pashtus, meaning that he'd have to restart his Nazirus and bring his Korbanus Tumah, and in the case of the Oysa Pesach, he'd have to bring Pesach Sheni, and so forth. So now we're going to discuss that point. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Hamnuna, Nazir v'Oysa Pesach shalhocha b'kever atahoyim b'shvi shalahen. If a Nazir, or somebody who's on his way to make the Korban Pesach, if they walked over an area where it turns out later on there was a kever atahoyim, and it was on the seventh day, of their tumah. So we're talking about in this case the nazir or the oseh pesach did become tumah mess. They sprinkled the parah druma water on the third day and on the seventh day. Now it's on the seventh day. We're going to discuss in the Gemara soon about before or after they toveled, about the differences between those. Keep in mind, of course, with the oseh pesach, all that needs to happen after that is he needs to tovel on the seventh day, and that's that. Then he can bring his korban pesach. The Rambam, by the way, has a unique shitta in that he learns that even on the seventh day of his Tara, a Tomei Mess would not be able to have the Korban Pesach shechted on his behalf. So he'd have to understand that the seventh day over here happened no later than the 13th of Nisan. According to him, if it happened the 14th of Nisan, wouldn't help him anyway, and he can't bring the Korban Pesach. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with that and say that no, even if the seventh day is the 14th of Nisan, would also work. Anyway. In the case of the Nazir, of course, on the seventh day would be when he's supposed to be bringing his shaving and bringing his korbanos, and then restarting his Nazirus. So on that seventh day, they walked over an area where later on they discovered Tumas HaTahorim. So Rav Hamnuna says, Tahorim, they're still considered Tahor. They don't have to restart their Nazirus yet again, and the person who made the Korban Pesach doesn't have to bring Pesach Sheni. My timer, why is that, says Rav Hamnuna? Deloya lima, Tumas HaTahorim, Mr. Because Tumas HaTahorim is not strong enough to make him forfeit days or to forfeit the Korban Pesach that he brought. So the Gemara says, Mosli Brava. So Rava says, what do you mean? Now, our Mishnah said, Yorad Litarim Tumas HaMess, if the Nazir went down into a cave to Tovel from his Tumas Mess, Tomei, and then we discover later on that there was Tumas HaTahorim there in the cave, Tomei, then we say he's Tomei Shechezkas Tomei Shechezkas Tahor Tahor, because the Chazaka of someone who was Tomei is that he still is Tomei, and the Chazaka of someone who's Tahor is that he is Tahor. So what are you telling me, Rav Hamnuna? We're in the middle, Samach Dalet Amud Aleph, about five lines from the top. So Rav Hamnuna had said that even in the case where the Nazir with Oysa Pesach was Tomei, and then they came across Tumas HaTahorim, if it was the seventh day of their Tara, then they're fine. But Rava is saying, what do you mean? Our Mishnah had said, Cheskas Tomei Tomei, Cheskas Tahor Tahor. The Chazaka of someone who's Tomei is that he remains Tomei. The Chazaka of someone who's Tahor is that he remains Tahor. So in other words, the Mishnah is telling us that only if the Nazir or the Oseh Pesach were Tahor at the time when they went into this cave or walked on this path or whatever, and later on we discovered Tumas HaTahorim, then we will say that the halacha, the special halacha of Moshe Sinai of Tumas HaTahorim allows us to consider that they're still Tahor and don't have to restore their Nazirus and don't have to bring Pesach Sheni, but not if they were Tomei at the time when they went into the cave or walked on the path. So what are you telling me, Rav Hamnuna? That as long as it was on the seventh day of their tahara from Tumas Mess, then they're fine. That's not what the Mishnah is saying. So the Gemara answers, Amalei, so Rav Hamnuna answers, Rava, Maidina lacha ben nazir. You know what? Actually, I will agree to you by a nazir that the Mishnah is talking about that, that saying that there's no difference whether it was the seventh day or any other day, because shemachosa tiglachas, because after all, the nazir not only has to, because the nazir has yet to shave and has yet to shave and to bring his korbanos. After all, the Mishnah is describing that he went down to Tovel. Now, if he Tovel, obviously he had the order is the nazir tummy. Tovels, then he shaves, then he brings his korbanos. Normally, even we learned previously in the Masechta that many times he would actually wait until the next day, until the eighth day, to shave and bring his korbanos. But even we said, fine, he might be able, according to some opinions, he might be able to shave and bring his korbanos on the seventh day, but he definitely has to have tovel first. After he's sprinkled the second time with part adumah water, he still has to tovel.
His tummy, then, and he's going to a bar that has.
Well, that's the problem. In other words, that's the thing. So the Mishnah is saying because he was tummy at the time, therefore raglayim ladavra. We said therefore the chazaka of a tummy is that he remains tummy. So therefore, when we find later on that there was tumas hachaim there, then it's going to turn out that he was tummy, and therefore that his tzvila was no good. So now he finds out, let's say a week later, he's already a week into his new nazirus tara. We were saying that he'd have to still shave for Tumah and forfeit that week of Nazirus and throw it all over again.
That's shame.
And in the case of Pesach, he'd have to bring Pesach shame. Now Rav Hamnuna is telling us that it's different when it was on the seventh day of his Tara. So now Rav Hamnuna is telling Rava that because of your question from the Mishnah, I would understand that the Mishnah is specifically referring to a Nazir, not to an Oysa Pesach. Because with the case of the Nazir, not only do you have, in order for him to start his Nazirus Tara, he not only needs to tovel, he also needs to shave. So therefore, you can still consider him to be b'cheskas tumah. I was talking about, Rav Hamnuna would say, I would be talking about where the nazir already tovled and already shaved, so now he already has cheskas tara. So even though he hadn't yet brought the korbanos yet, fine. According to Rabbi Eliezer, what's ma'akdiv, as we learned before, that our mission, that part of our mission at least goes according to Rabbi Eliezer, or the previous mission actually, and Rabbi Eliezer had said that it's the tiglachas that makes the difference, that makes him able to restart his nazirus or to finish his nazirus, as the case may be. So once he's shaved, then I'm going to say that's what I'm talking about. Then he has a cheskas tara. So it doesn't contradict the Mishnah. So in other words, so the Meiri summarizes as follows. If they find out, if they hadn't yet tovled, they passed by an area where later on we discover Tumas HaTahoim. Both of them are going to have to restart. The Nazirus has to restart. The Nazir has to restart the Nazirus. The Oysa Pesach has to bring Pesach Sheni. If they find out after they tovled, in the case of the Korban Pesach, Rav Hamnuna is telling us now he is Yotze, because having tovled he's not the Cheskas Tumah anymore, and the Mishnah would be implying that, because the Mishnah is only saying Cheskas Tumah Tumah. The Nazir, though, it's going to depend whether it's before or after he's shaving. If it's after he tovled, but before he shaved, Rav Hamnuna would tell us he still has to restart over, and if it's all after he tovled and after he shaved, then he's fine.
But because he holds it to be lesser, that's fine.
Because he's saying, because we're mentioning shaving like Rabbi Eliezer, according to the Chachamim, rather than shaving, it would be bringing the korbanos. Right. Well, so there's both. He needs to tovel in the mikveh. Everybody
needs
to mikveh. Tovel in the mikveh is not enough because there's still missing the maisa of shaving or bringing the korbanos, as the case may be. So Rav Hamnuna says, I would agree that there's a difference between Nazir and Oysa Pesach. Omalei Rava, so Rava answers Rav Hamnuna, Afanam Medinalach, actually then in that case, I will agree to you, the Oysa Pesach, the Lemachosav Leiklum, regarding someone who's making the Korban Pesach, or for that matter, Tosfos also adds the word in Gemara, Benazir Oysa Pesach, the Lemachosav Leiklum, in a case where they're not lacking anything. So in other words, exactly that case, where they already tovled, and the nazir already shaved or brought his korbanos or whatever, then he's b'cheskas tara, and then Rava is saying that I agree that in that case you're right, he won't need anything else, he already has a cheskas tara. Omalei Abaya, but Abaya says, what do you mean? Even in that case, even after the person has tovled, isn't there still something missing? Well, Mechoser head of Shemesh, isn't he still lacking head of Shemesh? So he still has a cheskas tumah. Until then, he's still a tvul yoim who has a degree of tumah. So why aren't we considering him still to have a chazaka of tumah? Omalei, so Rava answers him, because the difference is shimshim ameila arva. The difference is the sun sets on its own. It's not something that you have to do. Therefore, it can't be considered mechusar maisa. Therefore, it can't be said that he's lacking any deed, any action that he still has to perform. In the case of the, if he hasn't tovled yet, he still has yet to tovle. In the case where he has to shave, he still has to shave. But head of shemesh, not, because that happens automatically. Actually, further on in the sugya, Tosfos discusses and mentions the point that just the lack of in the next piece of the Gemara over here, Tosfos is going to explain that tevila, that not toveling is not necessarily considered to be lacking chesaron, because a person could tovel any time he wants. So that brings up the question: why now are we saying that? Why now are we saying that if he hasn't tovled yet, then we would consider him mechusar maisa and not? So the Birkas Rosh discusses, because here we're talking about the matter of cheskas tomei. Further on, in the next few lines, we're going to talk about a different din as far as the yeledes and the korbanos that she needs to bring. So you don't necessarily have to say that the definition of mechusar maisa is the same in both cases. When it comes to cheskas tomei, we can say even being mechusar a maisa, which he could do at any moment, for example, tovling, is enough to still, the fact is he still has a chazaka being tomei. Whereas when it comes to a yeledes, then it's different, and then we can say the fact that she has yet to tovel is not considered mechusar maisa, because she can tovel anytime she wants.
You can eat
when it comes to head of shemesh. Without head of shemesh, you can eat maisa sheni, you can't eat truma or kodshim, and you can't enter the Beis Hamikdash. Anyway, this is how the way we just learned is how Tosfos learns the flow of the sugya. Now the Rosh understands the flow of the sugya differently. The flow of the discussion between Rav Hamnuna and Rava and Abaya, the Rosh learns it like this. First of all, the Rosh has a different Dirsa that he says, instead of where we had that Rava says, I agree with you by a Nazir, that he's Mechosa Tiglachas, that he still doesn't have his haircut, so therefore it's different. So he has the Girsa that Abaya would say that. So what happens, in other words? So again, we're talking about he tovled, but he has yet to shave his hair. Therefore, he's Soser, and he says that's what the Mishnah is referring to. The Mishnah of Hamnuna, again, like Tosfos says, would be referring to after he tovled and shaved and whatever. So now Rava says, Abaya, so you're telling me you agree with Rav Hamnuna in that case, where he already tovled and shaved and did everything. Well, in that case, Rava would say, then what's the chiddush? And I would also agree that that's the case. So in that case, what's Rav Hamnuna's chiddush? Obviously, once he shaved and tovled, And then there's nothing else for them to be doing, why would they be so? It's clear from the Mishnah that Trumas Atahoim works in that case, the special halacha of Trumas Atahoim, that there's no problem. So what's the chiddush of what Rav Hamnuna is saying? So Abaye says the chiddush Rav Hamnuna wants to tell us is that you still call him Tur, even though he's lacking head of Shemesh. So Rava says, in that case, that's still not much of a chiddush, because Shimshim and Mela Arva, because the sun sets on its own, therefore there's no Havan in it even to think that we would consider him Mechusar Maisa, such that Rav Hamnuna should have to tell us a chiddush. If he already tovled and shaved, that nevertheless he's still, then he doesn't become Tomei from Tumas HaTahoim, because he doesn't have the head of Shemesh, Rava says there's not much of a chiddush in that. Obviously, since Shimshim and Mela Arva, then therefore, of course, we would consider him Cheskas Tahor, and then and if you're going to understand Rav Hamnuna that way, then there's no chiddush in what he's saying. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara continues. The Afa Baya Hoder Bey. Now, Abaya eventually changed his mind and took back his question when he says, so according to the Girsa in front of us, which is Tosfos' Girsa, that Rava had answered Shimshim Mela Arva, which originally Abaya didn't accept that point. Later on, Abaya came to accept that point. According to the Rosh's Girsa, the vote would be that Abaya had said there's a chiddush in what Rav Hamnuna says, that it's that he hasn't had a head of Shemesh, and Rava points out Shimshim Mela Arva. So eventually Abaya agreed that's true, Shimshim Mela Arva, and therefore it would mean that yes, there's not much of a chiddush in what Rav Hamnuna says. Where do we see that Abaya changed his mind? So like this, in connection with the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now you have like this, a woman who gave birth. So we know the Torah tells us, Parshas Tazria, that she has 40, if it's a boy, she has 40 days, of which 7 are Yumei Tumah and 33 are Yumei Tara. If it's a girl, it's 14 and 66. At the end of those 40 days or 80 days, all that all that 40 days or 80 days, she's considered as though she was a Tevul Yom. At the end of the 40 or 80 days, the next day, she brings a korban. She brings an animal and a bird if she can afford it, two birds if she can't afford it, and then she's finished with her kapara and she's able to eat kodshim and enter the Beis Hamikdash again. Now, you can have a case. If she had a boy, then you only have 40 days after that until she brings her korban. 40 days is not enough time for a new baby to be formed. Because in halacha, in general, we consider a baby during the first 40 days of its formation. The Gemara in some places says it's considered maya ba'alma. It's considered just water, and therefore it's not really considered a baby yet. It also has implications as far as certain halachas, as far as abortion, for example. It's easier al pi halacha to arrange for one during those 40 days than it is afterwards. Anyway, whatever, without getting into that, the point is, on the other hand, with a girl, since you have 80 days to work with, it's quite possible that during that time she becomes pregnant again and miscarries a baby within that 80 days. Because, in other words, after the first 14 days, after the girl is born, she's also to her husband. After that, she toivels, and then, even though she's still bleeding, it's called dam toihar. So in later times, the Rambam describes that in his times, in most countries already, they stopped holding the concept of dam toihar, and they consider the woman tamei no matter what. The Rambam says that he heard that in France, in his times, they still held by it, but afterwards, they stopped doing it over there also. So nowadays, any time a woman bleeds from her uterus, we consider her tamei, and that's that. In principle, the din d'oraisa is that after the 14 days, she's mutter to her husband. So therefore, it's quite possible for her to become pregnant again, and she starts carrying a baby, and then sometime during those following 66 days, after 40 days have passed, she miscarries it. So now the baby is already formed enough, 40 days have passed since conception, that it's considered a baby in halacha. Therefore, she has korbanos to bring bring regarding the birth, but it's not a live baby. So if it's still an early stage of development and you don't know whether it's a boy or a girl, then you have cases, the Mishnayos and the Gemara and Nida describe, there are cases where she's going to have Yimei Tumah for a girl and Yimei Tahara for a boy, and in other words, she's going to have 14 days of Tumah and only 26 days of Tahara, and equaling 40, and then as far as her korban, it's going to be a suffix whether she brings it after 40 days or after 80 days. Anyway, the point is, we're going to discuss over here, when are both births, the live birth at the beginning and the stillbirth later on, when are those covered by one set of korbanos versus when do they need different sets of korbanos? So Abraisa says, if she gave birth and then later on she became pregnant again and miscarried, yoim malois, if it was on the 81st day from the first child, tubby, then she needs to bring an extra korban. So now she'll need to bring, because it was already the 81st day or later, so therefore it's not covered by the original korban, she's going to need the original korban that already comes the morning of the 81st, she's already chayev to bring one set of korbanos for the healthy baby that she had before. Now there's another miscarriage later on that day, or on the 82nd or 83rd or whatever, any following day, then she's going to need another korban for that.
You know, miscarriage?
Even though it's a miscarriage, yeah. As long as it's considered a baby in halacha, which is after 40 days from conception. There's an opinion in the Gemara in Nida over there that a boy takes 40 days to form and a girl takes 80 days to form until it's considered a baby. And therefore, according to that, you wouldn't have the case over here, but the halacha is not like that. Actually, you still could, because you could still have the baby was miscarried after 40 days and you can see it's formed enough to be, and it would be a boy. The point is, the halacha is not like that. Either a boy or a girl takes 40 days to start forming in the womb. Yeah. Anyway, so if it was on Yom Malois, if it was on the 81st day, she's going to need to bring an extra korban. Toich Malois, but if it happened anytime during the 80 days, then she doesn't, she doesn't need to bring two korbanos. She can bring one korban and it covers both of them. Yochol, now the Braisa continues, you would think, Loi Tovi Aleda Shalifne Malois, maybe she doesn't need to bring an extra korban, only when it was Lifne Malois, only when it was within the 80 days, Abel Tovi Aleda Shalacha Malois, but maybe she should need to bring an extra carbon, maybe she should need to bring an extra carbon for another birth that was after Malois, even if it was during the first one. But Potter Mishnehen, Tosfos takes out those words, which means she becomes Potter from both of them. But in other words, let's say, for example, there could be a chain like this. She had a girl, now the clock starts, she has 80 days, and on the 81st day she's going to bring a carbon. Within that 80 days, let's say she became pregnant and miscarried, within those 80 days she miscarried and has to bring another carbon. So we're saying that that's covered by the original one. Now let's say after that, so again, she has, because of that miscarriage, she has Yemei Tumah and Yemei Tahara. Let's say, for example, to keep things simple, we're able to tell whether that new baby was a girl. Let's say we're able to examine the embryo and we're able to see that it was a girl. So now the din would be, again, you have another 14 days of Tumah and another 66 days of Tahara. But now, in other words, so you have a change. So within the 81 days after the miscarriage, she again became pregnant and again miscarried. So the third one, so you have the healthy baby, and then you have two miscarriages. The first one was Toich Malois of the second one was Toich Malois of the first one. So therefore it's covered. The third one was Toich Malois of the second, but it's Acha Malois of the first. Counting from the first, it's already after Malois. She hasn't yet brought any carbon because she hasn't had any opportunity to be Tahar. But so now the Braisa is saying that so you would think then in that case that maybe she should need to bring two carbonus, one for the original birth, which would also cover the first miscarriage, and another one separately for the second miscarriage, for the last one. No, Talmud Loma, therefore, the Pasuk says, so the word b'tipot m'shtehen means she would be potter from both of them, but again, Tosfos takes out that word. It's not really, we're not saying she'd be potter from both of them, but the point is, in other words, that right now we're saying, in other words, the Braisa is thinking, on the contrary, she should be maybe chayev two karbanos, one for the original one and one for the last one, yeah. Talmud Loma, v'mlois yimei tara, therefore, the Pasuk continues, when the days of her tara are completed, implying, b'yoim melois tavi, only if she had the miscarriage on b'yoim melois, or after it, on the 81st day or later, does she bring an extra carbon, toich melois, loy tavi, but if it was during melois, then she does not have to bring another carbon, no matter how many, so even if there was a chain like that, even though that last one was acha melois of the original one, but because it was toich melois of an earlier one, therefore, they're all covered by one carbon. Thus far the Braisa. Now, the Omer of Kahana, so Rav Kahana explains that what happens, the fact is that last miscarriage is long after 81 days from the original birth. The reason is, shiny hocha the mechasra carbon. The reason is, it's different over here because she's still lacking the carbon. Because the fact is she hasn't brought the carbon yet, therefore we can, for even the first one, therefore we can still consider that it's as if it was toth malois of the original one. The Rosh, by the way, points out that there's a machlokas in the Gemara in Krisus over there, where the Chachamim hold, where Rabbi Yehuda holds that actually what will happen is that every other one she has to bring a carbon for. Rabbi Yehuda will say, if you have a chain like this, let's say you have a fourth one as well, Rabbi Yehuda will learn that you have to bring, that she has to bring a carbon for the third, for the first one and for the third one, but not for the second and the fourth, because the second one is Toich Malois of the first one, and the fourth one is Toich Malois of the third one. So therefore he holds, in other words, that every time after 81 days have passed, then the clock starts over again, and therefore, so you have any ones that are doing that 81. The halacha is not like that, though. The halacha is like the chachamim, that even if you have a chain like this, as long as each one was within 81 days of the previous one, then it's all covered by one carbon. So now, the point is, when you learn that, you have to ask, Hasam Nami Michsur ahead of Shemesh. Isn't there the issue in the ratio of the Braisa? Now, what about you're talking about, you're saying that if she miscarried on the 81st day, then she would have to bring separate karbanos. Why? You could have, conceivably, she could still be missing ahead of Shemesh. Because, in other words, you could have like this. Normally a woman tovels at the end of the 2 weeks after a girl, and at that point she's mut, at that point she's mutter to her husband, and then after that it's yimei toiha. But you could conceivably have where she didn't tovel at the end of those 2 weeks. So therefore, so now, so at the end of the 80 days, she's not necessarily able to bring the korban, to bring the korban yet. And we still don't say that she's then, and we still don't say that she, that it's considered that, and we still call it, and we still call it tosh, and we still call it acham alois, and make her bring a separate korban. So you see, it doesn't necessarily depend on whether she actually tovled and is ready to bring the korban. That's Tosfos' explanation. Then Tosfos brings a different explanation, which is actually the Mefardish's explanation, that you actually have, the Gemara explains in Chagiga, that Midrabanan, she's supposed to tovel at the end of the 80 days. But Tosfos says, first of all, we're talking over here Daraisa, not Drabanan, and second of all, if we're Tevila Drabanan, you generally don't need Head of Shemesh. Only where the Torah tells you you need to tovel, do you need a head of Shemesh. So therefore, Tosfos sticks with their explanation that we're talking about she didn't actually tovel at the end of the 2 weeks. But now, so now comes the end of the 80 days, she can't yet bring her korban, she needs to first tovel on the 81st day, and then she'll have a head of Shemesh. And the answer is again, Omale Abaye, Shim Shulamela Arva, so now comes in where Abaye uses the same svara that Rava used on him before, the sun sets on its own, so therefore it's not considered that she's Mechusar Maisa, so therefore that doesn't really prevent her from bringing the korban, so we can already count on the 81st day, she's already considered as though she's already ready to bring the korban. In fact, the Rosh adds, based on a Gemara in Pesachim and some other places, that the same thing even would apply even if it was the night going into the 81st. You actually have a Machlokas, but Shammai Bishilol about that, but that even if it was the night going into the 81st, we would already consider it Acham Malois, because already, even though you can't bring Korbanos at night, but it's already the 81st night, and therefore it's already considered Acham Malois. It's already considered after the 80 days. Because as soon as the day comes, then sure, then she'll be able to bring the Korban, right? Right. So it's one thing, in other words, that's what we're saying, therefore. So if there were multiple miscarriages, one after the other, all in this chain, each one was within 80 days of the previous one, then the Braisa is telling us that she doesn't need to bring an extra korban. But if it happened on the 81st or later, even though she hadn't actually necessarily tovled yet, and here's where Tosfos points out that the lack of tevila is not necessarily considered mechusa maisa either, because she can tovel whenever she wants, and shimshim and meila arva, so therefore it's not considered mechusa maisa, and therefore it's considered that she needs to bring an extra korban. So we see that Abaye, if she had another miscarriage, was more than 80 days, was on the 81st day or later after the previous ones. So we see that Abaye changed his mind and accepted the svara of Shimshim and Meila Arva, which Rava had brought to him before, and therefore, that was the point. That's why the Gemara is bringing this in, to show that originally Abaye didn't accept that svara, but now he did.
Well, okay. The whole thing is only this is going to help if she actually went to Mikveh.
And it's going to help, right. Well, no, that's what we're saying. Even though she didn't go to the mikveh, nevertheless, if it was on the 81st day or later, she does need to bring another korban. If she hadn't gone to the mikveh and she has another miscarriage during the 80 days, which in that case, if she hadn't gone to the mikveh, she would still be osur to her husband, by the way, but you could have, for example, that let's say she was carrying twins and one of them was born to begin with and the other one was born and then the other one was born later on. You could also have that. The Gemara mentions in Nida an example involving Rav Chiya's wife who had twins 3 months apart. So it could happen. Anyway, whatever the case, the point is Abaye accepted that argument of Shimshim Meila Arva, which before Rava had brought up. So now Abaye changed his mind and accepted it as well.
That in that case
can make her mechuyav on a korban that she otherwise wouldn't have been, right? Now, since we mentioned, so in the Mishnah on Samach Gimel, we mentioned at the end of it, Shiraglayim Ladover. We said that there's Raglayim Ladover, which means Tosfos explains over there that even though the whole concept of Tumas HaTahoim is really only a halacha l'moshe Sinai, but we have a logical reason to apply it in certain cases and not in others, namely the concept of Cheskas Tomei, like we just discussed. And then Cheskas Tahor Tahor. And then the Rambam understands that the Raglayim Ladover means essentially the whole concept that we would say that a person has a chazaka is based on the concept of Raglayim Ladover. Anyway, so now the next few Mishnayos are going to digress from the topics of Masech and Nazir to talk about similar cases where we say Raglayim Ladover, where we say because you had a certain chazaka of something until now, then therefore that chazaka continues on, or different cases like that, where because we discovered something, then therefore we have a strong reason to assume that it continues to be the case. So the first one is, the Mishnah says, now you have like this. Normally, you're not allowed to move a mess from where they're buried. There are exceptions to that. Sometimes you can have an obvious example is, for example, where goyim are going to desecrate the grave, for example. We know, for example, famously, they had to move Rabbi Levi Yitzchok's body about 20 years after he passed away. There's other examples of Goyim Yisrael whose bodies had to be moved because the goyim wanted to build highways or stadiums or heaven only knows what else over there. You have cases where you're allowed to move a body to Eretz Yisrael. There are cases where you're allowed to move a body, as we're going to discuss, but many times not. In particular, the Gemara explains, if you know that if the body was buried over there with the permission of the owner of the place, then you're not allowed to move it unless, like in those examples, there's maybe a bazillion to the mess or something. Yeah, there was a famous thing that when they unburied him, they discovered that he had the talus and the body and everything was still intact, and this was 20 years after he had passed away. There's stories about that with similar stories like that with other tzaddikim where they were intact very, very long. There's a story involving at the end of Sporek Zidim from Zevin, for example, there's a story involving Rabbi Limelech Lezhensker where the Nazis in Machshamam opened up his grave, and that was 150, 170 years after he had passed away, and he was still intact, and they were so frightened by that they ran away. Anyway, so the Mishnah says, if somebody finds in his property, he finds a mess buried over there where until now he didn't know that there was a kever over here. Now you have to realize that in Eretz Yisrael, because they had to be careful with Tumah V'Tahara, they didn't just bury Mason indiscriminately. We learned earlier in the Masechta that in the lands of the Goyim they did, and that's one of the reasons we said why you had the concept of Tumas Eretz Amin. But in Eretz Yisrael, you wouldn't really have where you'd have a grave where you'd have graves, and people would end up just using it as regular farmland or whatever. So now you find a mess over there. So the question is this actually an ancient cemetery that somehow got forgotten and now has been rediscovered, or is it just found that a body happened to be buried there by Krai Ba'alma, just as a one-off? So if you find one mess over there, and the mess is Mushkav Kedarkai, and he's lying there in the normal way, as the Gemara is going to explain, he's buried in the position that Jewish Mesim are usually buried in. Nevertheless, he doesn't have to be concerned yet that this is an actual Beis HaKvaris. Notably, he's able to move the body, the es tfusasai, along with tfusasai, which is the earth underneath it. Yeah, we're going to discuss in the Gemara. There's two possibilities. The word can be tfusasai in the Russian tofas, as in like the mess, so to speak, grabs that earth, and it becomes like something you have to move along with him. The Gemara is going to derive it from a pasuk. Or the word can be tvusasai with a vase, in which case it comes from a word like misbesesis bedamoyich. It means like the earth in which, yeah, wallowing in your blood, in which case it means the earth that may have been soaked with juices and whatever from the mess, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara. So two ways of learning the word tvusasai or tfusasai. Anyway, so he moves the body together with tfusasai. So in other words, Tosfos says, that's the point. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is saying when you knew in advance that the body was buried over there, then you have to leave it over there because it's a Jewish kever and you're not allowed to move it willy-nilly. Here you're talking about that you just found it. You never knew of it before. Therefore, on the one hand, you could say it might have been part of an ancient Beis HaKvaris, which was forgotten. But on the other hand, it's equally likely, or maybe even more likely, that it was just Stam. For example, you might have a mess mitzvah that was buried over there, or not even a mess mitzvah. You may have had, for example, they were in a hurry. They had, like, say it was Erev Shabbos, they had to bury somebody quickly. They didn't have time to take him to the Beis HaKvaris, so therefore temporarily they buried him over there, and therefore implicitly it meant that there's a condition in it that they can move him when necessary.
Could be also the owner.
Could also be a guy. Yeah.
100 years ago.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, well, whether it's 100 years ago wouldn't matter. If we knew that it was a permanent Jewish burial, it would still be awesome. The point is, in other words, that we expect that Jews, because they have to be careful, Tumah V'Tahara, would be careful to keep track of where the Beis HaKvaris were, and therefore they would mark it. The Gemara in other places explains, actually, that they would mark them with plaster, and every year Beis Din would send out people, because the plaster dissolves over time, and they would remark them, so therefore it's not going to be forgotten so quickly. But here you have where it was found. It doesn't matter whether the farmer's a Kohen or not, even if he's Yisrael, he wants to make sure that his field is tar. Yeah. Anyway, Shnayim, similarly, Similarly, if a person finds two bodies like that, also no fun rest fusasan, then also he can take them together with fusasan, and he doesn't have to worry about it. But matzah shloisha, but if he found three mesim, im yesh bein zeh lazeh me arba amas vad shmona, if between one and the other there are four, between four and eight amas, and we'll discuss soon what that means, hareiz of shchunas kvaris, then you have, this is called a shchunas kvaris, an area of graves. This is already considered a base kvaris, and now you're not allowed to, and now you're not allowed to move them. So not only are you not allowed to move them, the problem is that you might have, there might be other kvarim in the area. This might be a whole shchunas kvaris, a whole graveyard where there were other mason in the area as well. So he has to start searching, he has to start checking the ground, 20 amas in every direction to see if there are any others. So now is where we need, actually. We need some diagrams. I sent them on the WhatsApp group a few minutes before we started over here, but we're going to have like this. The Mishnah tells us in Bava Basra, a layout of graves. The way they used to work in those days is they didn't bury in individual plots like we do now. Instead, what they had is they would have a cave. In the side of the cave, there would be niches, and they would put the mason into the niches, and then they'd close off the front of it. They'd close off the front of each niche with stones or mortar or whatever to seal it up. So the way they would work it is generally each family would have their own plot like that. Instead of having like now you have one big Beis HaKvaris for the whole community, instead each family generally would have their own Beis HaKvaris arranged like that. So the Gemara explains over there, the Mishnah explains over there, you have the Chachamim hold that the standard layout was you'd have a chotzer of 4x4 amos. When you're burying the mess and the people who are carrying him would stand in that chotzer. Then you have opening up in both two directions from it, let's say to the north and the south, it would be two caves, each one 4x6 amos. And in those caves, along the sides of those caves, you would have niches that extend underground where they would bury the mason. So here's, for example, the first diagram. So you see over here, they're not showing the chotzer. The chotzer would be over here, but you see over here the actual cave, 4x6 amos, and you see along the long side, there are three niches. Along the short side, there are two niches. There would be an amma between each niche and the next one. So that way, in such a cave, you could bury eight mason, then you'd have a similar cave going in the opposite direction for another eight, and so you'd have 16. So you'd have 16.
Three on this side, two on the short side.
You have eight. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Right.
Yeah. So eight right over here, and then there'd be a similar cave going in the opposite direction from the chotzer, so you'd have another eight, so 16 altogether. Reb Shimon over there in the Mishnah holds that you have a much more elaborate thing. Reb Shimon describes that the cave would actually be 6x8 amos, not 4x6, but 6x8. And he learns that you could have four along the long sides, three along the short side, and two sticking out from the corners. So the Gemara goes into a little bit about the mathematics of how exactly you would fit them all. But anyway, the point to him, you have a lot more kvarim that you could get out of each one. For that matter, Reb Shimon says in the Mishnah over there that you have not two caves like that, but four extending out in every direction from the chotzer. Reb Shimon Gamliel in the Mishnah points out over there, practically speaking, you have to consider what the terrain is like. I mean, if it's soft soil, you may not be able to build the way Reb Shimon is describing with that many, because they'll collapse. If it's harder ground, then you might be able to. Anyway, the point is, so that was the standard layout of a Beis HaKvaris in those times. So now, how do you get that he needs to check between four amos and eight amos, and why is he checking another 20 amos? So the Gemara discusses over there that on the face of it, so first of all, the question is, what do we mean about that you find them between four and eight amos apart? So now, according to the layout of the Chachamim in that Mishnah over there, you have a kever. You have along the long sides a kever, a space of an amma, another kever, another space of an amma, and another kever. So how are you going to have three of them within four amas? On the face of it, you can't. The minimum would be five amas. So the Rashbam explains that the Gemara explains over there that would be appointed of Shimon, but even appointed of Shimon on the face of it, you still need an amma between one kever and the other. So the Rashbam over there explains that actually appointed of Shimon, they're spaced together more tightly. Appointed of Shimon, they don't necessarily need an amma between one and the next. All they need is a couple of tefachim, and therefore you can manage to fit three mason within four ammas. On the other hand, they may not have spaced them so tightly. They may have spaced them looser out. Therefore, you have to check up to eight ammas, because eight ammas is the length of one of those caves. And therefore, so you might have what you discovered is one of the mason along the long wall of the cave. And therefore, you need to find whether there are any others along that long wall. So that would be why you have between four and eight ammas. Why our Mishnah would be appointed of Shimon, why it's saying between four and eight amas, because the minimum that you could have three mason in would be four amas, and the maximum, even if they're spread out a little bit, would be eight amas.
When the Gemara Mishnah says you have to check, you have to be digging
inside. You have to be digging into the ground to see whether you find anything. Yeah.
Surface is easy, but you have
to... Yeah, no, we're talking about, because remember, these niches were underground. You wouldn't necessarily see anything above ground, right? Tosfos over here has a different discussion. Tosfos over here disagrees with the Rashbam's understanding of it, and he says rather that it doesn't mean you always have to have an amma between one grave and the next. Therefore, Tosfos understands, like the last diagram over here, the three that you might find within between four and eight ammas means one of the ones from the long wall and two of the ones from the short wall, or the other way around. So therefore, in other words, you're looking on a diagonal. When you add together the diagonal, then you have four ammas, and you may have, again, not every niche may be occupied. Maybe they only buried in some of them, and then they moved away from there or something, and the rest of them never ended up getting occupied, so therefore you have to check eight ammas. Why our Mishnah goes on to say 20 amas, so the Gemara also discusses over there, because again, you have to consider you have the long lengths of the burial caves, which is 8 amas appointed of Shimon, 4 amas for the chotzer in the middle, another 8 amas going in the other direction. So 8 and 8 and 4 is 20, but then the Gemara discusses, even according to the Chachamim over there, you may have that you discovered them on a diagonal. Let's say, for example, you found the one, for example, in the northwest, and now you're digging towards the southeast. You know, these things weren't necessarily lined up with the actual cardinal directions. They just be in whatever direction you happen to dig them. So therefore, see, you could also have that even according to the Chachamim, you have, for example, from here until here would also be 20 amas from the one at the extreme corner of one to the opposite extreme corner at the other could also be 20 amas. And so the Gemara discusses over there how it would work out that you could have 20 amas. The Gemara points out over there also some other details. The Gemara points out another explanation is that actually you could have one of those caves is not necessarily full size, and the niches in it aren't necessarily full size either. It may have been for children, right? For stillbirths for children. What with, you know, you had a lot more stillbirths in those days than you do now. You know, with modern medicine, you also had a lot of children, unfortunately, passing away younger than you do now because of childhood diseases and whatnot. So therefore, they might have an entire cave reserved. They might have an entire wing of the section reserved for kids, and therefore for stillbirths and for young kids. And therefore, those would be smaller and more, and then those would be smaller, and those would be tighter spacing, and so on and so forth.
Does it say anywhere how deep they made these farms?
How deep they made them. So
let's say you're digging a well.
Yeah, you're digging a well or something and you discover it. Yeah. Okay. So the Mishnah continues. Motza echa besoif esrim amma. Now, if you found another mess 20 amas away from the original kever, boidekein menor lahalan esrim amma, then again you need to continue checking 20 amas in every direction, because again, that may be the beginning of a new cave. And here's an example, Shiraglaim Ladover. Here's another example of Raglaim Ladover, where we have strong reason to think that this is an actual Beis HaKvaris, because we already discovered three originally there in the closer area over there. So again, Tosfos discusses over here that the Gemara there in Baba Basra discusses a few possible ways of what it means. How you get to 20 is either you're going pointed of Shimon and you're saying one of the caves is smaller than the other because it's reserved for Nephilim, or it goes pointed to the Chachamim and you're saying that you're going on an angle over there, that when you go on an angle from one corner to the other, the end up at 20. So again, you're checking 20 up to 20 amas away. And so now, because you originally found three mason, then you have to be concerned that it's a Shchunas Kvaris. Had you originally found this one mess all by himself at the end of so now what are you doing? You're checking at the end of 20 amas. At the end of 20 amas, you're not necessarily finding three mason. All you're finding is one. Nevertheless, Raglayim Madaber tells us that you still have to be concerned that that might be part of the whole Shchunas Kvaris that you found before. This is an example of Raglayim Madaber. She'ilu Techila Metzoy. Had you found this mess by itself to begin with, you would have been able to take it together with the Tzvusa because you would have had no reason to think that it's part of a Shchunas Kvaris. But now that you found three within 20 amos of it, then you have to be concerned that what you found is an ancient cemetery that's been forgotten. Okay. So let's talk about some of the dinim in our Mishnah. The Gemara says, first of all, when it says, the word motzah means as opposed to when you knew already that it was there. If you knew already that it was there, then you're not allowed to move it in the first place. That's an example of what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, that if it's ever how you do it, if it's a known kever, then you're not allowed to move it.
Even if it's one.
Right. So it would be also to move it. On the other hand, in that Gemara in Baba Basra, that Ashbam has a different understanding, that the whole concept of Shchonas Kvaris doesn't apply in that case, because the whole point of Shchonas Kvaris, the whole din of our Mishnah, is only when you discover something that may have been a forgotten Beis HaKvaris, here where you know that there was a mess there, then therefore there's no need to start checking 20 amos in every direction, because you know already that it's there. You know where the Mesim are and that thing. When we said in the Mishnah mess, that means prapla horud, as opposed to when a person was killed, then these dinim of shchunas kvaris and tfusa don't apply to it. Not necessarily is that a permanent Beis HaKvaris. That may have just been as a one-time thing. Somebody was killed and buried over there. If he could even be a goy, he doesn't even necessarily have to be a yid, so therefore you don't need to worry about it. When the Mishnah, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda is explaining each of the first few words in our Mishnah is significant. It teaches us a din in that word itself. The word moitzeh means prat lamotzeh. The word mes means prat laharug, as opposed to when he was killed. The word mushkav means prat layoshev, means as opposed to if you found the body sitting up, which is not the normal way of burying. So then you don't have to worry that it was a Jewish burial. And kedarkei prat l'sheroshim munach ben yachosav, and the word kedarkei means as opposed to if the head is between the knees, which is also not. So then the body is like folded over. Then it's also not the normal way to bury it, and therefore again you don't need to worry, and it doesn't count towards the shchonas kvaris, and you may not need to take the tvusa away either. So the Gemara says, Toni ulavachanina mes shechosar, if the mes is missing any part of his body when he's buried. Then the din of tfusa and the din of shchunas kvaris does not apply. So you can move them and you don't even have to take the dirt. Tosfos wonders why not. Tosfos says maybe it's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. On the face of it, okay, I can understand why maybe shchunas kvaris it doesn't count to, but why shouldn't the din of or even shchunas kvaris, why shouldn't it apply? So the Birkas Rosh explains, fine, Tosfos is not worried about Tvusa, that's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, but Shchunas Kvaris, which seems to be based on Svara, that you seem to have found an old burial ground over here, so why shouldn't we say that if the mess is missing something, why shouldn't we need to worry about different Kvarim, and then so Tosfos leaves the question open. Actually, the Keren Oda understands that Tosfos is asking about Tvusa as well, that why indeed shouldn't it apply. Continues the Gemara. So v'chol hani my time aloy. In all these cases, why indeed are we not concerned about it? Because after all, it may be a goyish burial. Jews are not normally buried in these conditions, and therefore it's more likely that it was a goyish burial, and you're allowed to move it. The Mishnah continued, the Braisa tells us, Motzah Shnayim, if you find two Mesim, Rosh Shozeh, Betzad Magalois of Shozeh, if the head of one is facing towards the feet of the other, Rosh Shozeh, Betzad Magalois of Shozeh, they're facing each one to the other one's foot, Eilahem Tfusa, Voloi Shchonas Kvaris, again, the Din of Tfusa and the Din of Shchonas Kvaris doesn't apply because they might be Goyish Beri. So they might be, even if they're Jews, they might have been temporary, because Jews don't normally bury like that, etc. Matzah Shloisha, another din, what happens if you find three mesim? Ha'echad yadua ushnayim tchila, one of them you knew was here all along, and the other one but you didn't know whether it was a permanent burial or a temporary burial. Obviously, if you knew it was a permanent burial, you can't move it anyway. We said that before. But let's say, so you knew that this one was there, but you don't know whether it was actually meant to be a Beis HaKvaris or whether it was just stam that they buried him there because they were in a rush or something. And the other two you didn't know of before. So ein lahem tfusa ve ein lahem shchunas kvaris oy shnayim tchilo shnayim miduim, or you find two that were the two that you first rediscovered and two that were known, ein lahem tfusa ve ein lahem shchunas kvaris, then the concept of tfusa of having to take the loose dirt and the shchunas kvaris doesn't apply.
Why not?
Because again, it's only when you have three of them were buried where there's reason to assume they were all buried around the same time. Here, where one of them was known, how is it that you know of one of them, you don't know of the other two? It means they must have been buried here at different times, and therefore it's less likely that it was a shchunas kvaris. With that said, though, there are rishonim who have the girsa that in that case yesh lahem shchunas kvaris. That in that case they do have. So Tosfos brings from the Rashbam that it's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. And from the Ri, that the reason is because since we knew of one in the first place, then we ought to have known the other ones as well. And if not, then it means it wasn't a shchunas kvaris in the first place. But with that said, there is a different girsa, the Orach Misha in the back of the Gemara instead has the girsa that yesh lahem tfusa. They do have tfusa because tfusa should still apply regardless. We have every right to think that they're Jewish bodies. Just shchunas kvaris wouldn't apply, that you could unbury them, but you'd still have to take loose dirt with them. The Gemara continues, Maisa Rav Yeshevav Shabodak. It happened once Rav Yeshevav was checking the ground. He found two bodies that he knew of already, and one that he had rediscovered to begin with. He thought that it has to be a Shchunas Kvaris, and therefore now we're not going to be able to move any of them, and we're going to have to check 20 Amos. But Rav Akiva, who was a Chaver of Rav Yeshevav, tells him, all the effort you put in was for nothing, and don't have to worry about it. Loy omru shchunas kvaris elo l'shloisha yiduin. The whole concept of shchunas kvaris only applies to three that were known before, or three that weren't known before. Is the case elo l'shloisha tchila, or for three that you discovered to begin with now, but not in this case where some of them were known before and some of them not. There's no reason to think that those belong to a shchunas kvaris because why would you have known of only some of them and not others of them? More logically, they were buried at different times. Okay. So the Tanis Yisrael summarizes the dinim so far. You find one or two kvarim where you didn't know of before. You can take them with the tursa. You don't have to check for anything else around them. If they were Yiduim, you're not allowed to move them, but you don't have to check around them. If you find three, where again, we said some of them are known and some of them are not, then you're allowed to move them even without the dirt. In fact, in that case, it's worse even. They have less status than one that was discovered just now. Because since you found them at different, they're in different states, then it means they were probably just buried here as a temporary thing, or it might be, again, like Tosfos said, it's our lost Lomoshe M'Sinai.
Why can you have to move them with the dirt?
Because in that case, we have every reason to believe that they might not be Jewish burials at all. They might actually be Goyish burials, and therefore you don't have to worry about them. Or again, it might be Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai that applies only when they're unknown burials, but not where some of them were known and some of them were not. If you have three that were known or three that were not known, then you have not only are you not allowed to move them, but you have to check for the 20 ounce.
So, because they're not Tamatama, that's why you don't have to move them?
Because the whole concept of Tavusa, the Gemara is going to learn now from a pasuk involving Yaakov, and Yaakov was a Yid.
So only a Yid you have to worry.
So that's the Gemara says now, Notlan vest Tavusa, son. So you take the bodies away with the Tavusa in the case. Heichi dami Tavusa, what exactly is Tavusa? Or the first question is, where do we get this concept of Tavusa from? Omer of Yehuda, Omer Kura, because the pasuk says when Yaakov asks Yosef to take him and bury him in Eretz Yisrael, he says, "On Sasani in Mitzrayim, you should carry me from Mitzrayim." Now, well, of course, from Mitzrayim, where else? It means toil imi, means take some of Mitzrayim with me, take some of the dirt of Mitzrayim with me. In other words, Yaakov knew he's going to be temporarily buried in Mitzrayim while they're embalming him and while they're whatever. Afterwards, he's saying, take the body together with the dirt of Mitzrayim that it was lying on and bring all that to Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, "Hama shiur tfusa." What is the shiur of that? How much shiur? Peter Shabalazer, Peter Shabalazer ben Rabbi Tzadik, Peter Shabalazer ben Rabbi Tzadik, or on the side of here, it's supposed to be Rabbi Lazer ben Pedas. Noitel offer tichayach. You take all the loose dirt under the mess, because that may be part of the remains of the mess or whatever. And choifer b'psula shalosh etzbayis. And furthermore, you have to dig down into the virgin soil 3 etzbayis because the juices of the mess or whatever may have soaked into that ground. So the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Bekama Shiur Tfusa, Peter Shabalazim Reb Tzadik, Notavasa Kisnim, you have to take all the chips of wood, which may be those are fragments of the Oren the mess was buried in, there's like Sosais and all the clods of dirt that are under the mess, and among them, Zerda Tasevadoyin, you can throw away the ones that are definitely part of the Oren and that definitely are just dirt, and there's nothing of the mess in them. Umaniach has a Sfekas, you set aside the ones that are a Sufik, so people don't become Tommy with them, the Sufik. Bashar, and as far as the rest, Mitzstarif, Leroy, Binyonish, Ames, Leroy, Vatsamas, the rest of it will combine to make up the shear of most of the frame of the mess that was, we learned earlier in the Masechta, 2 leg bones and 1 thigh bone, for example. And as far as Roy Vatsamas, as far as the quarter cab of bone, that those are all going to be metamim oil, and they also count towards the ladle full of rakov of dust from the decayed remains of the body that we learned earlier in the Masechta, that a certain amount of it is metame, whenever it is metame, the masa of oil. So all of that, when you're certain that it comes from the mess, then it all counts to that. Tosfos actually asks, 1 second, if it was buried in a wooden coffin, we learned before there's no rakov anyway. So Tosfos leaves that question open. But Tosfos explains another explanation, at least, that Sosis means worn out things. So it means like worn out remains of the Tachrifin. Anyway, the Mimaforish points out a different point over here about the Rakov. He says, we did learn before that it has to be buried in a marble coffin and without clothes, etc. But the Mimaforish learns that after it was buried, like if you had one mess that was buried like that, and now you have Rakov of another mess that you want to include with it to make up the Maloy Tavid Rakov, that could be included. Mimaforish asked on that, what do you mean? He said before, even if 2 mason were buried together, there's no Rakov, etc. So how would this idea of the Mimaforish's work? So we'd have to explain over here that we're talking about, let's say, that he was buried in a marble coffin, and then let's say eventually the coffin cracked, and then Rakov spilled out of it, so then you'll have the whatever you find under the mess will count towards it. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik is saying that you don't have to dig into the dirt. All he says is you have to take all the loose things, and only the ones that you definitely have pieces of the mess mixed in with it. The answer is, and Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas isn't a murderer, he can't argue with a Tana. The answer is Huda Amaki Haitan. The answer is that Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, the Amora, is following a different Tanya. The Tanya of a Kamashir Tfusa, Amor of Yirchan Meshum ben Azai, Noitel Ofer Tichayach, he takes all the loose dirt, the Choyful of the Sola, Shalosh Tfus, and he digs 3 Tfachim down into the virgin soil, and all of that is called Tfusa. So Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, the Amora, is following that opinion, and therefore that opinion argues that Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, fine, but he can have a different opinion. And that is the halacha, that is what's considered tfusa. So the all the loose dirt over there and 3 tfachim below that is all may have been soaked through with stuff from the mess, and therefore all of that is considered with the tfusa, and therefore all of that has to be taken when you're reburying the mess.
So they had to take some dirt.
So exactly, that's what we're saying. They had to take some of the dirt of Mitzrayim with them. That's what we're saying. Mitzrayim toiling. Yeah. Okay. So tomorrow, Best Hashem, we will continue.